Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with our analysis of the Oklahoma City bombing and an update in that investigation. In our previous half-hour segment, we looked at numerous indications of a much broader conspiracy, including an international fascist conspiracy that involved German Nazi elements. We took a look at the allegations of involvement of a German Nazi named Bernard Sevenacher, as well as allegations that he was involved with Andreas Strassmeyer in the Oklahoma City bombing. We also saw an interesting allegation that Andreas Strassmeyer, in addition to being the son of Gunter Strassmeyer, Helmut Kohl's chief of staff, former chief of staff, I should say, was the grandson of one of the founders of the Nazi Party in Germany. We've looked at numerous allegations of international connections in the past, including evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the AMIA bombing in Argentina, and also allegations of an Iraqi connection to Dennis Mahone. I refer interested listeners to not only the Specialized Knowledge and Abilities series available from Spitfire, but also a number of updates from both 1997 and 1998, which will flesh out many of the topics of discussion in much more effective fashion than I can do under the circumstances due to the limitations of time. There are many conflicting elements in some of these allegations. However, the weight of evidence suggests that this was the Oklahoma City bombing conspiracy was a much broader conspiracy than simply the two individuals that have been convicted so far, namely McVeigh and Terry Nichols. Research credit on all of these articles goes to the same listener who researched the articles in the previous segment, and these articles come from a variety of different publications, including the Denver Post's website and also the website of the Rocky Mountain News. This article, for example, does come from the Rocky Mountain News website. Their website is 13/http://www.insidedenver.com/extra/bomb. Once again, www.insidedenver.com/extra/bomb. This article is by Lou Kilzer, K-I-L-Z-E-R, of the Rocky Mountain News. It's headlined, "Conspiracy Theories Fly as Attention Switches to Grand Jury." And this is from the Rocky Mountain News of January 8th of 1998. The article reads in part as follows. A Colorado jury's decision not to hand Terry Nichols a death sentence, or even send him to prison for life, is a startling setback for the government. It also assures longevity for the cottage industry of conspiracy theories that surround the Oklahoma City bombing. Attention now will focus on an Oklahoma City grand jury that is investigating whether a wider network, beyond Nichols and convicted bomber Timothy McVeigh, was involved in the bombing. In 2 weeks, J.D. Cash, a writer who has spawned many of the theories about various right-wing entanglements in the case, is scheduled to testify before the grand jury. Others are likely to follow. The suspicion that others yet unknown were involved in the bombing is made more tantalizing by one of the first statements key government witness Michael Fortier made to the FBI when he decided to cooperate. Fortier asked FBI agents if they could protect him from, quote, the Aryan movement, unquote, if he chose to cooperate. The statement has never been explained or explored publicly by prosecutors who raised no hint of involvement by the racist right or suggested why Fortier would need to be protected from it. By the way, I would add that there are many indications that, in fact, the Aryan movement was involved in Oklahoma City. I would refer interested listeners to the aforementioned programs as well as the various programs about the book Blood Oath by Stephen Wirth and Carl Jaspers, including live interviews with Stephen Wirth. That book alleges a connection between the killing of Ron and Nicole and the framing of O.J. and Oklahoma City, and I believe that book to be largely accurate. Skipping down, more about allegations of a wider conspiracy. The government contended that the bomb was built in a state fishing park the morning before the bombing. However, no witnesses placed Nichols at the lake. And skipping down still further, most damaging, perhaps, was Charles Farley, who said about this, by the way, the damaging of the notion that just McVeigh and Nichols were involved. Most damaging, perhaps, was Charles Farley, who said he saw a flatbed farm truck loaded with ammonium nitrate, a key bomb component, alongside the Ryder truck at Geary Lake. Unfortunately for prosecutors, Farley said he saw the truck and explosives there at a time Nichols was elsewhere. And Farley said he saw at least four men around the truck. He even identified a photograph of one of those men. The name of the mystery man was not mentioned at the trial, but the photograph was part of the defense evidence. The man in the photo was neither McVeigh nor Nichols. And still more about a wider conspiracy. This, once again, a research credit on this once again to a member of the listening audience. This is from the Denver Post's website, at the Denver Post online. Once again, www.denverpost.com/bomb. This article is from the Denver Post of December 6, 1997. It's an article by George Lane of the Denver Post staff. It's headlined, Defense Announces Mystery Witness. The article reads in part as follows. In what seems to be an unusual, if not unprecedented, move, attorneys for accused bomber Terry Nichols have filed a motion to be allowed to schedule a mystery witness who doesn't yet know he is to testify and whose identity won't be known even by the government prosecutors apparently until he enters the courtroom. The motion, with specific details filed under seal, was filed with the court Thursday, but not made public until late Friday. Normally, prosecutors must present a list of their witnesses before the start of trial. Defense attorneys are required to present their list of witnesses to the prosecution before the government finishes its case. Quote, neither the witness nor the media need advance notice that he is being sought after by the defense, the motion said. Again quoting, furthermore, Mr. Nichols' motion involves the procurement of a defense witness's attendance and is of no concern to the United States. Skipping down, a letter convicted bomber Timothy McVeigh may have written to recruit a replacement for Nichols in the plot to bomb the Oklahoma City Federal Building was introduced into evidence during regular trial proceedings hours before the secret witness motion became issue Friday. Quote, I'm not looking for talkers, I'm looking for fighters, said the letter that was left in the Arizona desert almost 5 months before the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City was destroyed by a bomb. Donald Pippins, P-I-P-I-N-S, an employee of an Arizona utility company, said he found the letter November 30, 1994, while he was inspecting power lines near the Arizona-California border. The letter was in a brown envelope with a burned-out glow stick attached to it about 10 to 12 feet up a utility tower. McVeigh, who was convicted of the bombing and sentenced to death earlier this year, lived off and on in Kingman, Arizona during the months before the bombing, and he reportedly told Michael Fortier, a friend, that Nichols wanted to back out of the bombing plan. Pippin said the letter that hadn't been opened was addressed to, quote, S.C., unquote. The letter asked S.C. if he had a family and would be likely to back out because of it. The letter in McVeigh's handwriting also mentioned Randy Weaver, a white supremacist whose wife and son were killed in a standoff with federal agents, and questioned S.C.'s dedication, quote, I cannot be 100% certain of your legitimacy, unquote, it said, again quoting, if you were a Fed, think twice about the Constitution you supposedly are enforcing, unquote. There is speculation that the SC the letter was addressed to is Stephen G. Colburn, a drifter who was arrested weeks after the bombing in early May of 1995 in Oatman, Arizona, and questioned as FBI agents combed the country looking for bomb plot participants. Colburn reportedly knew McVeigh, but after being questioned by bomb investigators, was returned to California on a fugitive warrant. He never has been mentioned in the prosecution's case in either bombing trial. I would note that in the book Blood Oath, there is speculation that the DNA and blood specialist who obtained samples of O.J. Simpson's blood, which had been placed at a hospital that O.J. frequently had surgery at, the allegation was made that Stephen Colburn, who is documented to have been an associate of McVeigh's and a white supremacist, and who also was a blood and DNA specialist at Cedars-Sinai Hospital, where O.J. frequently had medical attention, the allegation is made in the book Blood Oath, that the Colby referred to as the person who obtained the sample of O.J.'s blood with which to frame him for the murders of Nicole and Ron, speculated that Colby was in fact Stephen Colburn. Colburn certainly was an associate of McVeigh, certainly a white supremacist, and an individual who was a blood and DNA specialist at Cedars-Sinai Hospital, where O.J. had medical work done. And again, I've noted that there are numerous indications of a much broader conspiracy, including one with international links. I would recall an earlier update with regard to the Oklahoma City bombing, maintained that there was an evidentiary tributary running between the Oklahoma City bombing and the World Trade Center bombing. Namely, a Philippine national named Edwin Angeles alleged that Ramzi Youssef, the convicted mastermind of the World Trade Center bombing, the funding for which, by the way, came from Germany, was in fact present at a conference where a man strongly resembling Terry Nichols, at a conference that was held in the Philippines, attended by a man strongly resembling Terry Nichols. This conference was about launching an international terror campaign against American targets. There are also evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the AMIA bombing in Argentina, an alleged Iraqi connection, and also connections running in the direction of German Nazi elements as well. More about these allegations in an article that once again appeared in the Rocky Mountain News. Research credit on this to a member of the listening audience. Once again, their website, www.insidedenver.com/extra/bomb. This is an article by Kevin Flynn and Lou Kilzer of the Rocky Mountain News. It's headline, New Allegations in Trial's First Day. It's from November 4th of 1997. And skipping down about an alleged wider conspiracy, Michael Tigar, T-I-G-A-R, Terry Nichols' defense attorney, talked about Timothy McVeigh and many of his apparently broader connections. Skipping down, Tigar stressed that it was McVeigh, not Nichols, who can be connected to radical German national Andreas Strassmeier, to the Elohim City racist compound in Oklahoma where Strassmeier lived, to a gun-loving Arizona man, Stephen Colburn, to Arkansas gun dealer Roger Moore, to Arizona Patriot leader Walter Bassett, and to Rick Kaufman, an Arizona member of the neo-Nazi National Alliance. In McVeigh's trial, the single brief mention of Strassmeier's name and the cross-examination of an Oklahoma state trooper brought an immediate objection from the government, U.S. District Judge Richard Mache sustained it. Skipping down, a key witness who recently died, Danny Wilkerson, ran a small shop in the Regency Towers apartment building a block from the Muir building. Coverdale said Wilkerson saw McVeigh and a second man parked in a Ryder truck right outside his shop before the bombing. McVeigh came in and bought two sodas and a pack of cigarettes. Wilkerson told investigators, McVeigh doesn't smoke. Too many witnesses saw a second person, unquote, Coverdale said. That's Janny Coverdale, Coverdale, who lost two grandsons in the blast. And again, there are many, many witnesses who have seen more people than just McVeigh and Nichols involved with this case, and indeed in the article that we're going to conclude with in this segment, it is acknowledged by some of the people in the case that in fact this was a much broader conspiracy and that it is still under investigation. That, by the way, may account for some of the official reticence on the subject. There certainly does appear to be a cover-up going on. I do not, however, think that the provocation scenario that has been floated largely by conspiracy theorists and by elements associated with the Patriots and militia networks, I don't think that flies. The media coverage surrounding Oklahoma City is not at all characteristic of what would be expected from a provocation. In fact, if this was a provocation intended to force the passage of the anti-terrorism bill, as some have alleged, we would be seeing numerous allegations planted in the domestic and foreign press of a much broader and heinous, wider conspiracy that we need to pass this bill to protect against, and thereby give up many of our civil liberties. In fact, the allegations of a wider conspiracy, in fact, the firm indications of a wider conspiracy, are being covered up, and that is not characteristic of a provocation. Research credit on the following goes to a listener. Once again, this is from the Denver Post's website. This is from the Denver Post of December 5th, an article by Howard Pankratz and George Lane, headlined Witnesses Focus on Truck. The article reads in part, boosting the defense theory that the Oklahoma City bomb wasn't built in a day, nine people testified Thursday that they saw Ryder trucks at a Kansas lake in the week before Terry Nichols allegedly helped craft the device that tore the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building apart. The testimony came as defense lawyers sought to dismantle the prosecution theory that Nichols and convicted bomber Timothy McVeigh built the bomb at Geary Lake State Park near Nichols' home on April 18, 1995, a day before the blast. Nichols' lawyers claim that McVeigh and other still unidentified conspirators planned the bombing and were in the area near the park a full week before the explosion that killed 168 people and injured more than 500. James Sargent, a soldier who was stationed at Fort Riley, Kansas, said he completed paperwork for his medical retirement on Monday, April 10th, and went fishing at the lake that afternoon. He arrived between 2 and 2:30 p.m. and stayed until dark. He was fishing from a jetty and, quote, "As I look across the middle of the lake, I saw a Ryder truck there," unquote. Sargent said he saw a red primer-colored pickup and a white car approach the Ryder that afternoon, but he never saw any people. "Every time I pass the lake, I always look to see if anybody's fishing," unquote, the retired soldier said. The Ryder was there for 3 and possibly 4 more days, he said. Realtor George Rucker of Harrington, Kansas, said he saw a Ryder at the lake on April 10th, and again on the next 2 days, and on April 18th, the day the government says the bomb was built. And there are other indications of people, many people beyond McVeigh and Nichols, involved in this case. One of the more intriguing aspects of the Oklahoma City investigation concerns a, quote, "Robert Jacks," unquote, or perhaps several people named Robert Jacks. And I've noted that this is one of many articles that has not made it into the mainstream press, and again, that's not at all characteristic of what we would expect with a provocation. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This, once again, comes from the Rocky Mountain News, and this is posted on the Rocky Mountain News website. That website, again, www.insidedenver.com/extra/bomb. And this is from the Rocky Mountain News of April 19th, 1998. This is an article by Kevin Flynn, FLYNN, of the Rocky Mountain News. And it's headlined, OK City Case, Still Missing a Link. 3 years after the bombing of the Mural Building, investigators continue hunt for Robert Jacks. That's in quotes. As we'll see, there may very well have been several people named Robert Jacks or confusions about one person. And as we will also note, the investigation is still continuing. And so that is one factor that might account for some of the reticence in the case. I also suspect the alleged involvement of Andrea Strassmeyer, and I suspect that's a lot more than an alleged involvement, may very well be necessitating the cover-up, because that would take the investigation adjacent to the highest levels of the German government and would have deep international implications. This article reads in part, "The two men responsible for the Oklahoma City bombing are in prison, federal investigators assure the public. But the case is far from closed. Behind the scenes, investigators continue scouring the nation for a mystery man in the case. They know his name, or at least what it sounds like. Robert Jacks, J-A-C-K-S, or Jacques, J-A-C-Q-U-E-S, or Jacques, J-A-C-Q-U-E-Z, or J-O-C-Q-U-E-S. They may even have his fingerprints. But they don't know where he is, whether he is still alive, or where he was 3 years ago today when a bomb at the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building killed 168 people. Are investigators merely trying to tie up loose ends, or is the mystery deepening? A 4-month investigation by the Rocky Mountain News uncovered evidence that the search for, quote, Jacks, unquote, is far from over. Even as Attorney General Janet Reno in January praised the FBI for rounding up the guilty parties, Timothy McVeigh, who awaits execution, and Terry Nichols, who awaits sentencing in Denver, she had agents pursuing yet another long-shot lead on Jacks," unquote. The search has taken on dramatic new overtones in the aftermath of a tantalizing public statement last month by Denver U.S. District Judge Richard Mache, who presided over the McVeigh and Nichols trials. By the way, I would note that he also presided over the trial of the Order white supremacists who killed Denver talk show host Alan Berg. The allegation was made by Skinner, the informant for Stephen Wirth and Carl Jaspers in the book Blood Oath, that the timing of Operation Thunderbolt, the killing of Nicole and Ron and the framing of O.J., was timed to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the killing of Alan Berg. Continuing. Mache soon will sentence Nichols to what is expected to be a long term, possibly life, in a federal prison. At a hearing in open court on sentencing guidelines, Mache suggested that he might reduce the sentence if Nichols provides information about the bombing plot. The judge made it clear he believes that questions about the bombing remain unanswered. Quote, If the defendant in this case, Mr. Nichols, comes forward with answers or information leading to answers to some of these questions, it would be something that the court can consider in imposing final sentence, unquote, Mache said. Again quoting, it would be disappointing to me if the law enforcement agencies of the United States government have quit looking for answers in this Oklahoma bombing tragedy, unquote, the judge continued. Chief Prosecutor Larry Mackey assured Mache the government hasn't. We continue to work, Mackey said. Robert Jacks is far and away the man most intensively sought by the FBI in connection with the bombing since McVeigh and Nichols were arrested. He is the only named man seen with McVeigh and Nichols and not yet apprehended. Yet, quote, Robert Jacks, unquote, was never mentioned during the 6 months of proceedings in the Denver trials of McVeigh and Nichols last year. During those trials, prosecutors presented evidence of a conspiracy in which McVeigh and Nichols acted on their own. But even as late as the Nichols trial, the FBI was still pursuing, quote, Jacks, unquote. The Rocky Mountain News learned in December that a Robert Jacques in Odessa, Texas, had shared a post office box after the bombing with an acquaintance of McVeigh's, Jim Rosencrantz of Kingman, Arizona. That's Rosencrantz, by the way. After the news questioned several people in Odessa about Jacques, the FBI sent agents there to interview many of the same people. In keeping with long-standing policy, neither the FBI nor prosecutors in the Oklahoma bombing case would comment on the search for, quote, Jacks, unquote. The news uncovered reams of evidence on the FBI's extensive hunt for Jacks. No other name investigated in the bombing consumed nearly the time and effort the FBI spent turning the nation upside down to find him. In 3 years of probing, the FBI has checked hundreds of people's backgrounds simply because their last names are Jacks, Jacques, Jacques, or Jacques with an O. The news found evidence of broad FBI searches on the name in at least 39 states, from Hawaii to Maine, from Washington to Florida, from Minnesota to Texas, and Colorado. And skipping down, speaking of Rogers, Arkansas, but Rogers is 35 miles from Cassville, Missouri, where the only known sighting of Jacks took place 2 months later, a time when McVeigh and Nichols were acquiring bomb components. Three witnesses said a man identifying himself as Robert Jacks came to a real estate office in Cassville with McVeigh and Nichols on November 2, 1994, to inquire about a remote property for sale nearby. The FBI also looked for possible links between Jacks and a now-deceased member of a Midwest bank robbery gang that called itself the Aryan Republican Army. Some of its members were linked circumstantially to McVeigh through an eastern Oklahoma racist camp called Elohim City. Andrea Strassmeyer, a resident at the camp, met McVeigh at a gun show. Strassmeyer's roommate at the camp, Mike Brescia, pleaded guilty to being one of the Aryan bank robbers. The FBI noted a resemblance between the composite sketch of Robert Jacks, unquote, seen in the real estate office, and a sketch of another ARA member, Richard Guthrie, given by a witness to a Wisconsin robbery. Guthrie later cooperated with the FBI, but hanged himself in a jail cell in Lexington, Kentucky on July 12, 1996. McVeigh once showed his sister Jennifer a wad of $100 bills and claimed he'd gotten the money from a bank robbery committed by others, according to a statement Jennifer McVeigh gave the FBI. And skipping down still further in this article, Weldon Kennedy, the FBI special agent who led the bombing investigation, said the hunt for Robert Jacks stems from a brief business meeting in a southwest Missouri real estate office on November 2, 1994, 5.5 months before the bombing. Three witnesses in Cassville, Missouri, said they met with McVeigh, Nichols, and a short, dark, muscular man who introduced himself as Robert Jacks, unquote. By the way, I would add that description fits the mysterious John Doe number 2, widely reported in the aftermath of the bombing, and then an individual who slowly disappeared and we're now told doesn't exist. Continuing. The FBI first interviewed these witnesses on May 10, 1995, 3 weeks after the bombing. They came forward after the FBI arrested, questioned, and released two drifters in Carthage, Missouri. One of the drifters was named Robert Earl Jacks. Jacks and his traveling companion, Gary Land, lived in the El Trovatore Motel in Kingman, Arizona from around Christmas 1994 until early April of 1995. That last week, McVeigh moved into the Imperial Motel 5 blocks away. Jack and Land traveled to Oklahoma several weeks before the bombing and were registered in a motel in Perry, Oklahoma on the day of the blast. McVeigh was arrested on a traffic charge in Perry 80 minutes after the bombing and taken to the county jail. When agents discovered the coincidence, they tracked down Jacks and Lane and arrested them on May 2, 1995. Supposedly, they were suspects for no other reason than that they had been in Kingman and then in Perry when McVeigh was there. But Cassville realtor William Maloney saw Jacks escorted by agents on television news, but when Cassville realtor William Maloney saw Jacks escorted by agents on television news, he knew it wasn't the Jacks, unquote, he had met with McVeigh and Nichols. The man Maloney had met pronounced his name Jacks, but said it was spelled differently. Maloney said he thought it was J-A-C-Q-U-E-S, and skipping down still further, the sketch of Jacks, unquote, provided by the Missouri witnesses, generally resembles the sketch of John Doe number 2, an unidentified man four witnesses said they saw with McVeigh and the Kansas Rider Agency where the bomb truck was rented. The FBI later said the man wasn't with McVeigh and actually visited the truck agency the day after McVeigh. And skipping down still further in the story, you get another evidentiary tributary of this mysterious Robert Jacks, or more than one person using a similar name. One of the most intriguing chapters in the search for Robert Jacks involves a down-on-his-luck roustabout in Odessa, Texas. He spelled his name Jacques. He had somehow escaped notice in the FBI's coast-to-coast canvassing. Jacques, an Hispanic spelling, was one of four spellings the FBI used in its nationwide hunt, but for unexplained reasons not in Texas, which had a large Hispanic population. Jacques's whereabouts during the brief time that Jacks, unquote, is reported traveling with McVeigh and Nichols can't be firmly established. He quit his oil field job in Odessa in September of 1994 and returned the following July, 3 months after the bombing. He told many friends in Odessa, at work, at his favorite bar, and at his personal life that he had been in El Paso, Texas. That is true from Christmas through July, but his whereabouts on November 2, 1994, the date of the Maloney real estate meeting in Missouri, are uncertain. When he returned to Odessa, he bragged to his friends that he had been working as an undercover drug enforcement for law enforcement, skipping down. In May of 1996, Jim Rosenkrantz and his girlfriend Patty Edwards moved to Odessa to escape the glare of bombing case publicity and law enforcement scrutiny in Kingman. Sometime before the end of the year, Rosenkrantz and Edwards also started receiving their mail at a box at the West Odessa station. It was the same box Jacques was using. The U.S. Postal Service said a post office box can be rented by only one party at a time. If more than one person receives mail in a box, there must be a relationship of some sort. That doesn't necessarily mean Jacques and Rosenkrantz knew each other. A third party could have connected the two. FBI agent Terry Kincaid, who questioned witnesses in Odessa after the news began its inquiry, said that in addition to Jacques and Rosenkrantz, a third man he wouldn't name also received mail in the box at the same time. Kincaid, based in Midland, sent his raw data to the bombing investigative team in Oklahoma City without determining whether Odessa's Jacques was the man seen in Missouri with McVeigh and Nichols. It may remain a mystery forever. Robert Jacques of Odessa died January 7, 1997, after an industrial accident. Skipping down, who was the Robert Jacques of Odessa? Could he have crossed paths with McVeigh and Nichols? Despite the incredible coincidence of sharing the post office box with McVeigh's friend Rosenkrantz, it is still unlikely that this Jacques is the man seen in Maloney's real estate office. The news sent 9 family photos of the Texas Jacques to the Missouri witnesses. They say it isn't the same man they saw. But a former girlfriend of Jacques looked at the sketch drawn from Maloney's description and had an immediate reaction. "That's him," Teresa Anderson said. "What did he do?" Well, indeed, there is much to be filled in about the mysterious Robert Jacks, or Jacques, or Jacques, or several people with similar names. And indeed, I think there is a great deal more investigating to be done on the Oklahoma City bombing, which certainly appears to have been a much wider operation than one performed by Nichols and McVeigh. It remains to be seen how much of this apparently wider conspiracy eventually makes it into the media. That concludes this segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.